This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga, and here is what's coming up. Nigeria will get a World Bank package, soften subsidy cuts, and the world joins Rwanda in remembering victims of the 1994 genocide. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Celebrations marking World Health Day are taking place in the shadow of COVID-19. World Health Organization Chief Tedros Ghebreyesus is calling for a global response to the pandemic, which he says is the most severe health crisis in a century. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
And as COVID-19...
This year's World Health Day coincides with the 75th anniversary of the World Health Organization. The agency was created in the aftermath of World War II to create a healthier, more peaceful, and secure world. In many ways, this vision of attaining a better standard of health for all people has been achieved. For example, WHO reports life expectancy globally has increased from 46 to 73 years, with the biggest gains in the poorest countries. Smallpox has been eradicated, and polio is on the cusp of elimination. But WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says much of this progress has been upended by the COVID-19 pandemic, which he calls the most severe health crisis in a century.
And as COVID-19 has exposed so brutally, there remain serious gaps in the world's defenses against epidemics and pandemics. For all these reasons and more, the world needs WHO now more than ever.
WHO warns of many emergencies and challenges in the coming years, with the emergence of new diseases and deadly pathogens, including Ebola, Marburg, SARS, and COVID-19. Last month, WHO's 194 member states began negotiations on a global accord to prevent and prepare for future pandemic emergencies. Special advisor to the Director General, Bruce Aylward, says it is important to land this agreement as rapidly as possible.
And the world is at increasing risk of new pandemics emerging. And I think the world, everyone would be remiss not to just concentrate minds, efforts, political capital where needed as well. We want to make sure that we're much, much better prepared for that one than we were for this. And we can't be without an accord like the one under negotiation.
Health officials say they hope the pandemic accord will be completed and ready for adoption at the World Health Assembly in 2024. In stressing the importance of this agreement, WHO Chief Tedros notes no nation can protect itself against future epidemics and pandemics without the engagement and cooperation of all nations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Today is World Health Day, and one of the things that contributes significantly to improving health worldwide, including Africa, is proper hand washing and drying, as it reduces the spread of contagious illnesses. It's a simple task, but can only happen with access to clean water. One inexpensive solution is the tip-a-tap, or leak-a-tin. Joseph Riga is the African Regional Program Officer for the international aid group World Neighbors and explains how to build the leak-a-tin to VOA's Caravan Dam.
They are made using a container, which is usually about a 5-liter container, and it's supported on two pieces of sticks, and it has a device that also made using rope and sticks, whereby it's operated by foot. And using this device, you can be able to tip the container so that you can provide water for washing hands. So it's a simple device that can even be made by young kids in schools and in homes.
Who's building these things and who's providing them?
Basically, the TP taps are, we will train as well neighbors, we train communities, especially young children, to construct them. They're simple devices that can be constructed by kids as young as 10 years. And so long as they have a container of 5 liters and sticks which are easily obtained from the neighborhood and a rope, they can be able to construct the leaking. Basically, provide training, working together with community volunteers to be able to train young kids to construct the leaking.
Are you seeing these in Kenya and other places? Are they popping up and in public places?
Yes, they are really popping up in Kenya, even in Uganda and Tanzania, where we're having projects. Because, you know, we're using the kids through the school health clubs to promote the liquid things and for hand washing. And in the past, you can say 3 years since, they have been really become popular. Because during the COVID pandemic, hand washing was one of the things that was really being promoted. In recent years, also, we have been seeing cases of waterborne diseases, especially cholera, and we have been using these delicatessens to promote hand washing.
The key to it sounds like you've got to have a supply of clean water. So where do people get the clean water?
Clean water is from various sources. One is that there are natural springs that provide clean water, and World Neighbors has been also supporting in terms of rehabilitating the water springs to ensure that they continue to provide clean water all around. Also, we've been promoting rainwater harvesting, whereby we construct ferrocement support communities, construct ferrocement tanks to harvest rainwater, including even the rehabilitation of wells and digging of simple, shallow wells that provide water to the community.
That's Joseph Riga, Africa Regional Program Officer for the international NGO World Neighbors. He was speaking to my colleague Caro Van Dam from Nairobi, Kenya. Nigeria has secured an $800 million relief package from the World Bank to help cushion the impact of a plan to remove a long-held fuel subsidy. Nigerian Finance Minister Zainab Ahmed says the money will be disbursed to 10 million households as cash. Ahmed said authorities also will develop a mass transit system to ease the cost of daily commutes. Timothy Abiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
Nigerian Finance Minister Zainab Ahmed said Wednesday that 10 million households, or up to 50 million Nigerians, will benefit from an $800 million World Bank relief package ahead of the removal of a long-time petroleum subsidy in June. Ahmed made the announcements to journalists at the State House after a weekly cabinet meeting with officials. She said the money was ready to be disbursed but did not provide details on how much beneficiaries would receive. She spoke to the local station TVC News.
We're on course. We made that provision to enable us exit fuel subsidy by June 2023. We've secured some funding from the World Bank. That is the first tranche of palliatives that will be that will enable us give cash transfers to the most vulnerable in our society.
Ahmed said authorities were also working with the incoming government to deploy non-cash interventions, including a mass transportation system to ease daily commutes for workers. The ruling party candidate Bola Ahmed Tinubu was declared the winner of February's presidential election and will be sworn in next month. It is unclear if the new administration will discontinue the subsidy program. The country spends more than $850 million each month on fuel subsidies, according to the Nigerian National Petroleum Company Limited. And the past government's decision to halt the costly venture has sparked mass protests and unrest across the country. Emmanuel Afimia is the head of Enermix Consulting Limited, an oil and gas consulting firm.
How much would each household be getting? Let's say roughly around 60,000. But then once that is exhausted, what next? How do they intend to select the 10 million households? Who is sure that the 10 million households will receive this package? I just don't believe in it.
Nigeria is one of Africa's leading producers of crude oil, but Nigeria has been struggling to stem oil theft and revive local refineries. The Independent Petroleum Marketers Association of Nigeria said this week that Nigeria must commence local refining before removing subsidies to keep costs of petroleum products within reach. But Afimia says citizens have already gotten used to fuel shortages and price hikes.
People have bought fuel at ridiculous prices in December and January. So if subsidy is finally being removed by June and then the price goes up, Nigerians may actually frown, but it won't be as worse.
Nigeria is reeling from controversial elections and a cash crunch resulting from the country's currency reform policy that took effect in January. This week, the World Bank said the incoming government faces weak growth and multiple policy challenges. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Mpoga in Washington. Togo's parliament has extended for 12 months the state of security emergency in the Savanes region in the far north of the country to help prevent incursions by Islamic extremists from Burkina Faso. President Nasimbe originally imposed the state of emergency in June 2022. It was extended a few weeks ago for 6 months, and the new extension is for a year. The measure allows security forces and local authorities more flexibility to combat threats from militant groups. The French news agency AFP says the country's Minister for Security says the situation remains worrying because of repeated assaults by Islamic radicals across the border. Ghana, Togo, Benin, and Ivory Coast are increasingly cooperating and sharing intelligence to better combat the threat from across their northern borders. Today, the world remembers the 1994 genocide in Rwanda. On April 7, 1994, a wave of killings of members of Rwanda's Tutsi ethnic community began. The spark was a plane crash that killed Rwanda's president, Juvenal Habyarimana, and Burundi's president, Cyprien Ntanyamira, both ethnic Hutus. The killing went on for 100 days, and more than 800,000 Tutsis and moderate Hutus died. Rwandan embassies around the world, including in Washington here, today held annual Kwibuka or Remember commemoration events. At the embassy event in Washington, Fias Bevunor, a scholar of post-conflict identity, spoke about the Rwandan government's efforts to unite the country since the genocide.
But as you congregate in the public square, laws were built and instituted that enable everybody to come together and actually reclaim that power of togetherness, of oneness, and looking toward, converging toward, achieving one goal. So we see a lot of achievements.
Consel Nishimwe was a child when the killing began and wrote a book about her experience called Tested to the Limit. She quotes Holocaust survivor and anti-genocide activist El Wiso to explain why she tells her story.
It's my duty as a survivor to share, because all of us here, we learn from the history, we learn from those who have gone through that experience. So I love a quote from Elie Wiesel. He said, when you listen to a witness, you become a witness. When you listen to a witness, you become a witness. So for me, sharing is not easy, but I feel like it's so important to do.
There will be several days of commemorative events in Rwanda and elsewhere to honor the lives lost. South Africa's Justice Minister has expressed shock after a court in the United Arab Emirates refused to extradite two brothers from the wealthy Gupta family. The Guptas are wanted in connection with corruption charges against former President Jacob Zuma, as Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg.
The Minister of Justice, Ronald Lamola, said he was dismayed to learn this week that a United Arab Emirates court held an extradition hearing for Atul and Rajesh Gupta in February. The court denied Pretoria's request, but South Africa was only informed now. The Indian-born siblings were close friends of former President Jacob Zuma and are suspected of using that connection to influence cabinet appointments and win lucrative government contracts, a scandal that's become known here as state capture. Zuma is facing charges in a separate corruption case. He and the Guptas deny all allegations. The Guptas fled South Africa in 2018. They were arrested in the UAE last year on South Africa's request. Lamola says South Africa will appeal the court's decision, which the UAE court denied on a technicality. The court said the charge of money laundering related to crimes committed in the UAE as well as South Africa, meaning the UAE has jurisdiction to prosecute it. The court also found the arrest warrant relating to the charge of fraud and corruption had been cancelled, which the Justice Ministry called inexplicable. This level of non-cooperation is highly unprecedented in the arena of extradition requests, the Justice Ministry statement said. South Africans would be justified to believe that they are being denied justice, the statement continued, adding the denial flies in the face of assurances given by the Emirati authorities that our requests meet their requirements. It's unclear if the Guptas are still in the UAE after recent media reports that they were spotted in Switzerland. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
In much of the world, today is Good Friday, one of the holiest days for Christians. On Sunday, millions of Christians around the world will celebrate Easter, the day Christians believe Jesus Christ was born, actually, the Easter. On the African continent, one of the dominant Christian denominations is Roman Catholicism. Vatican figures show Africa had 256 million Catholics in 2021. That represents about 18% of the continent's population and 5.2 million more than in 2020. Alice Harris, senior correspondent with the Crux News website, tells VOA's Carol Van Damme that Africa is one of the fastest growing continents for Catholicism, something that is not lost on the Vatican.
Catholicism is growing in Africa at record levels, faster than almost any other place in the world, right? In another 50 years, it'll take over, you know, some other traditionally Catholic areas of the world, Latin America, Asia. You know, Africa is on pace to really become sort of a Catholic superpower going into the future. And it's also the place where you see, again, not just, and a lot of that has to do with just, you know, trends in population growth itself, right? The church is growing on par with, you know, the population in on the African continent, but also kind of the church and its evangelistic, you know, activities there. There are a lot of missionaries present throughout various countries in Africa, mm-hmm. and seeing an involvement of the church at higher levels than almost anywhere else in the world.
But you could also look at that, too, and look at the other side of the coin. It seems like Catholicism is declining in other areas of the world, right?
It certainly is, you know, and part of that, I think, is due to just, you know, demographics. There's just less population growth, particularly throughout the West, what you would think of, you know, in terms of traditionally Christian cultures, and an increase along with that, an increase of secularism. You know, many African societies are still very traditional. They hold traditional family values. And we're not, you know, in the West, we've kind of wandered away from some of that. So all those are sort of factors together, you know, and this is why I think another reason that Pope Francis is so interested in the African continent. He's made it a priority to visit several times now. He just most recently visited in January. He went to the Democratic Republic of Congo and to South Sudan, in part to promote peace, but also to sort of rally the people who are in those countries. I mean, right now, the Democratic Republic of the Congo has some 50 million Catholics. It's the most Catholic country on the continent of Africa. So he really is trying to prioritize this through his own outreach. And, you know, he's calling constantly Western nations to remember their Christian roots and to go back to that. The activity is decreasing in terms of not just the number of Christians, but really those who are practicing. It remains a cultural part of people's lives, but not necessarily in practice. And so that's really where Western countries are starting to fall off the map, is in practice, whereas Africa is growing and is really booming with priests and vocations, and they're sending sort of the excess priests they have to the West. And so now you have the situation where Africans are quite often being missionaries in what are traditionally Christian countries. So it's an interesting dynamic that's really taking shape and is set to increase in the coming years.
That's Alice Harris, senior correspondent for the Crux News website. She was speaking with my colleague Cara Van Dam from Rome, where she covered the Catholic Church and the Vatican. For followers of Orthodox Catholic traditions, Easter will be on April 16th. Meanwhile, Muslims worldwide are observing Ramadan, a month of fasting and prayer. As Muslims in Tanzania observe Ramadan, they are facing increased food prices and uncertainty of supplies for the iftar meal when breaking the fast each day after sundown. Charles Kombe spoke to residents in Dar es Salaam and has this story.
A resident of Dar es Salaam, Zainab Athman, looks forward to the month of Ramadan each year as a time to reflect on spirituality through fasting and prayer. But this year, Athman says, has been difficult because higher food prices have made it more expensive to host iftar and evening meal to break the day's fast.
Prices of goods have increased. Previously, I used to buy rice for 1,800 Tanzanian shillings, but now I have to buy it for more than 3,000 shillings. The money I have is no longer enough due to the high prices of goods.
Athman isn't the only one feeling the pinch. Some families are having to cut back on the variety and quantity of food they consume during the month of Ramadan. Businesses have also been impacted by price increases. This shopkeeper says crop yields on farms were not as plentiful as in years past, which has impacted prices.
The prices are increasing because the farmers do not have a good harvest. So when we go to purchase goods, we only get limited quantities. As a result, we sell these products at higher prices to make a profit.
Like its East African neighbors, Tanzania experienced poor rainfall and delayed monsoons last year, impacting food production and resulting in scarce commodities. High food prices meant that some are having to share iftar meals with neighbors and family members to ease their burden. Others are turning to less expensive food options. Muslims in the country remain committed to observing Ramadan and are finding ways to adapt, says Muslim scholar Swaleh Ibrahim.
We're truly grateful to God. We do not have a large income, only a small one. But with the blessings of the holy month of Ramadan, despite the hardships of life, as we know Ramadan is a blessed month, God blesses the little we have and we can sustain ourselves for iftar and suhoor.
Meanwhile, Athuman says she hopes for a more stable food supply, which will make it easier to afford the traditional celebratory iftar meals that unite families and communities. Charles Kombe for VOA News in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. For the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbu Yebro, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.